Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. This is Greg Meyer. We're in a rather unique time as we head into the fall of 2021 and have to prepare to be indoors and in person as a community. While we prepare for that, starting October 10th, we're taking a pause from our regular podcast to bring you a series of podcasts that we did in January of 2020, just before the pandemic started, that really centered us on who we are and what we are all about. That series of conversations was called Not One Stone. I'm glad you're listening today. We'll be releasing the rest of these conversations over the next couple of weeks. Here it is, week one of Not One Stone. It was never meant to be that way. We're starting something new with the new year, 2020. It's kind of 2020 is maybe a good year to have a goal, a resolution of seeing the world a little bit and our lives a little bit more with 2020 vision. We'll never quite get there, but it can be a not bad thing to do. And, you know, what better place to start than why we're here this morning? I mean, we aren't just a Sunday morning club, right? We're here because we believe in this idea of weaving our lives better with our true selves and with others in the world and with God. And so what is that all about and why are we doing it and how can we actually make that matter? I think that's pretty important stuff. And we are calling this Not One Stone. And that is about starting over with God, faith, and church. And, you know, well, we're going to be exploring this for a number of weeks. And I want to introduce it today. To be clear, we are not talking about what we believe or trying to clarify, you know, what Fabric believes, all right? In fact, that approach is the problem that we're trying to deal with. We don't want to go about that. We are looking at starting over with this whole belief thing because God, faith, the God, faith, church, Christianity conversation is long overdue for a reboot. And here's something that I hope you all understand as we go into this, because it's what these weeks are kind of all built on. In fact, it's really what we've been about for 13 years. And that is, it is not important that we all agree with each other as we go on this journey, or that we even all have the same idea about what this journey represents to us. Conformity is not required for us to do this together. In fact, I hope you will at least begin to understand, if you don't already, that conformity is the problem. It's what keeps us from being able to make that journey. In fact, what is important is our willingness to be a part of this messy process together. To not see it as a destination, a question to be answered, a problem to be solved, but as one next step on a lifetime of growth, something that doesn't end, and we always have to be part of together. Before we go down that path together, I think it'd be good for us to kind of see where we all are, kind of what is the spectrum of how we all feel about this God, faith, and church thing. So some of you are familiar with Menti, if you've been around here a little while, all right? If you've got a cell phone with you, I invite you to pull it out. You have permission to play with your phone. No, and you should see a screen come up that says, Not One Stone, starting over with God, faith, and church, okay? So here's the question that I want you to do. Where are you at with God, faith, and church? For those of you who are listening on a podcast, choices are happy, engaged, wrestling, giving or given up, burnt or hurt, or uninterested. Here's what I'm seeing up there is you got 22% are happy, 31% feel engaged, 37% are wrestling, that's the biggest bunch of you. Giving or giving up is 6%, then burnt or hurt, 2%. Wow, that's good. Uninterested, 3%. Good, some realism there. I think there's all of us have some different components within us that are at work in this too. So I think it makes sense that sometimes we've picked more than one. You can sort of see, well, this is what we are, right? We got the majority of our people are feeling wrestling, at least. This conversation of Not One Stone, of starting over, you know, who's this geared for? Is this just for people who are on the, you know, that way up at the end, they're wrestling or they're, you know, giving up and things like that? I don't think so. I think this is a conversation for everybody. We aren't doing this just to accommodate the discontent among us, all right? This is a chance to re-envision what Jesus was about in the first place. And this isn't just something that we should be doing here. This is what we need to do as an entire world. And in fact, if you are on this, you know, I'm feeling engaged and I'm feeling happy with my faith, I hope one of the reasons is that we've helped you to try to keep it real, all right? And so that it can be something that you can feel that way with. But that's a big order, and I know that you can't just get that to that point one time and have it stay that way forever. It's a lifetime growth thing, like we said just a minute ago. Now, if you are one of the people who does feel discontent, if you're kind of up on that side, or there's an element of you that's strongly discontent with this Christianity, God, church stuff, one, you are in good company, and it isn't your fault, and yeah, it's a problem, okay? If you are a person who has no trouble with God, faith, Christianity, then you might be part of the problem, all right? And if I just offended you, I'm sorry, but I did. And the reason is that the good company that the discontent are with includes people like Jesus. So let me take you down this path here. First of all, this is a situation today. Church, faith, Christianity is in trouble. Or at least the forms of it that we understand, that we see in our world around us today. People were once trickling out of church. They are now leaving in droves. Church buildings are being closed street corner after street corner constantly. Our office, Southside Commons on 38th Street, was a church. It was still barely functioning when we moved in there, and it was basically empty, and we helped transform it now into a community center. I mean, it's only one of many churches all over our neighborhoods that are going through that transition. And I want to say that this, call it exodus from the church, is inevitable. And it's inevitable because we, meaning society, have made a basic mistake. We have made the mistake of thinking that Christianity is what Jesus was talking about. We have made the mistake of thinking that religion is the same thing as where Jesus was trying to lead us. And it wasn't. Now, at some level, people have always known that the institutions, these things that we've created, are not the same as what it's really all about. But while we've kind of known that, we've sort of gone ahead and kept creating religion and trying to enforce it and get people into it at the same time anyway. And I suppose we are no different. I mean, we are not immune from that same process of taking our insights and our experiences and trying to turn them into something that becomes set in stone. But hopefully we can be aware of it, and we are aware of it, and we try to create processes here so that we don't fight change, but we invite it and look at it and open ourselves to it. So now, if it's just me saying that Christianity's in trouble and it's not what Jesus was talking about, or if it's just us saying it, then maybe you can easily ignore that. But if it's Jesus who's saying it, then that's a different story, I think. So I want to talk about this because this is exactly what Jesus was saying. And to point out in one particular place, which is where we get the title for the series from, Not One Stone, to introduce this and what he said, we first of all need to see the context, right? I'm looking at the end of Mark chapter 12 and into the beginning of Mark chapter 13. But here's what's going on. So Jesus is in Jerusalem, and he's having debates with the religious leaders and just talking to people, and they're firing questions at him, and he's answering them questions. And one of them comes up to him and says, "So what is the number one commandment from God that we all should know and follow?" And Jesus says, "Well, it's the Lord is one. Yahweh is one. I am who I am is one, and you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, with your whole self, and you should love your neighbor as yourself." Okay, people agree. And then it comes out of that, well, that's not only true, but that is how the kingdom of heaven sees the world. Now, you need to understand, when Jesus says the kingdom of heaven, we think of this place. We think of heaven up there or something. That's not what he's ever talking about. The kingdom of heaven is a way of seeing the world. It isn't a place. It's a perspective on the world. It's seeing the world the way God would see it. It's seeing the world when all three strands of self, others, and God are tightly woven together, right? That's the kingdom of heaven. That's why the kingdom of heaven can be near or he can say to the person that asked him this question, you are close to the kingdom of heaven. It's not because you're almost dead or because you're almost allowed in, it's but you're almost seeing it the way that you're supposed to see it, okay? And then he spends a little time pointing out the absurdity of all their doctrinal beliefs. But what we find there, and this is on your outlines, that what Jesus is trying to tell us, that God is interested in relationships, not rules. God's interested in relationships, not rules. And that is so important. We like rules so much. They're so easy to enforce, and relationships are such a mess. That's why we make resolutions about things and not about relationships, because the things are so much easier than the relationships. Anyway, so then after that, he goes and he spends some time pointing out the absurdity of all their doctrinal beliefs. He runs them through this stuff, and their heads just get dizzy. And it isn't like he's not trying to prove them that their doctrines, their beliefs are wrong. He's just trying to make them see that this isn't where the game is played, guys. This isn't what it's about. You know, it isn't whether it's right or wrong. It's just not the questions that are helpful to us, right? In fact, you're using them not to build a better relationship with God with all your heart and all your mind, but to divide us among each other and decide who's right and who's wrong, right? That's not helpful. And then he really gets into it, all right? He takes the religious power brokers to task for the hypocrisy and for making a big show of their importance. And then, he lifts up this tiny, tiny little thing that this one woman does in putting this itty-bitty gift into the, you know, giving it to the temple out of the generosity of all she has, and compares that to the big gifts that people make with big show and a lot of fanfare, but they're doing it out of their largesse. They're doing it out of their abundance, and it really has no impact on them. He does all that, and basically what we could say is that he is not affirming the religious systems of his day. Right? I mean, he's making an enemy of himself to them. And then this happens, all right? This is the key piece. The conversation is all over. The debate is all over, all right? And he's walking through the city with his disciples, with his followers, and one of his disciples, probably, you know, these are, you know, country hicks that aren't used to the big city, and so they're looking around at everything, and one of them says this to him. This is on your papers. It says, as Jesus came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings. Isn't this impressive? Isn't this cool? And Jesus asked him, do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down. Not one stone will be left upon another. Now, many people have taken this saying of Jesus as support for his God status by the fact that he is able to predict the future. Because in about 40 years, the temple is going to be destroyed by the Romans, right? So they say, look, Jesus is so amazing, he can predict the future. When did Jesus spend time trying to predict the future? He didn't. What does the context say he was talking about? He wasn't talking about buildings, folks. He's talking about what those buildings represent, wasn't he? I mean, that's what he was always talking about. Jesus is talking about the human creations that we call religion that need to be dismantled if we want to be in relationship with a God and with our true selves and with others. Something that can't be done with the biggest, the fanciest, the most impressive systems of doctrine that we might ever come up with, something that can only happen within ourselves. It has to come down. All of it. Not one stone can be left upon another. So, what is religion? What is religion? Religion is the human packaging of a spiritual experience. Yeah. Makes sense. I know it's no huge enlightenment. Religion is a human packaging of a spiritual experience. Religion is what we do with something that is bigger than we can fully grasp or understand in order to make it something that we can handle, right? That's a normal human reaction to do. And part of this packaging we do is in order to make things last, right? I want this to last. This moment is so important to me. I want to be able to come back to it. I want to be able to repeat it. I want it to be replicable, and I want it to be recognizable tomorrow and the next year. So I'm going to do something to, what? Turn it into stone. This packaging is also done by us in order to make things transferable, to make the spiritual transferable to other people. I want others to have what I have. I want to be able to pass it on to my children and to my grandchildren, right? Neither of those are bad instincts. To make something last and to be able to pass it on, those are good things. But the problem is that there are no guarantees that you can do that with spiritual experiences. I mean, we all kind of have to have our own, and they're all going to have the mark of who we are, what is going on in our lives, and what our time is like in our lives right then. These spiritual experiences are really just kind of cracks in reality where we get a chance to glimpse something that is bigger than ourselves. It's something that we can't hold on to. That's why it is so special. That's why it's called holy. That's why we refer to these as these thin places. These experiences tend to come at moments where we've participated in what is bigger and greater than ourselves. We glimpse them, but they are notoriously hard to hold on to. Now, here's the deal about religion. Religion is not a bad thing. It could be used for bad purposes. We've seen that, all right? But it isn't a bad thing. But the point is, it is not the thing, all right? Religion is not the thing. If we would remember that the sole purpose of religion, with all of its trappings, its beliefs, its structures, its hierarchies, its institutions and everything, if we could remember that the sole purpose of all of that was to point us at something else, it would be fine and we would have no problem. But like I said before, people being people, we don't stop there. We make it the thing. We worship it. We ask people to weave their lives, not with their true selves and others with God, but with our doctrines and our creeds. We ask people to love our sets of beliefs and our codes of behavior with their heart and their soul and their mind instead of God. And those things that Jesus talked about loving God, ourselves, and others, they become dependent upon our adherence to those codes and those sets of beliefs and those institutions and the things that we have created. Our religion becomes a prison for us. And we then impose it on other people in order to get their obedience, their buy-in, their devotion to what we have created and what we have devoted ourselves to, and it isn't working. And people can sniff that out from 100 miles away and stay out of it. People sense the emptiness of it. And Jesus says, not one stone. Not one shall be left upon another. Now, this is not an announcement of the collapse of the movement Jesus started. It's an announcement of the release of it, to let it actually begin happening. My point here, and the point of the series, is not to talk about all the places the church has gone wrong. We're not here to try to tear down the religious structures of our day. That is not our job, and it isn't helpful to be judgmental about what other people are doing. We don't know how different experiences bring people into right relationship with themselves and with others and with God, right? That's something for them to do. I want to talk about this because of the growth side that it has for us. We have the opportunity to be about something that is truly life-giving. And if it's going to be that for us, it's going to be because we learn to hold tightly to the things that we hold loosely. Yeah, isn't it kind of funny that sometimes the most important lessons in life are found in paradoxes? But isn't that what we are called to do? To hold tightly to that which we must always hold loosely? So I'm going to give a few hints about where this is going, and then I want you to sit with this week. Hopefully talk about it in your groups or with your friends, your family, and to consider what stones maybe you've stacked on top of each other to imprison what is meant to be freed in your life. So a couple of quick thoughts for all of us to wrestle with. First of all, this conversation is often referred to as the deconstruction of faith. I resist that language, and here's why. When you talk about deconstruction, it begs the question of reconstruction. And that's exactly what we're not supposed to do. Jesus weighed in on this very clearly. When it came to, when we tear this all down, what are we going to rebuild? And Jesus says, don't build. Right? Don't build. Not one stone. Instead, Jesus says, be. Be in relationship. Now, there's a problem with that. I mean, when we start being church, or whatever you want to talk about that way, in the way Jesus describes it, it's, first of all, it's messy, right? Because there aren't a lot of rules anymore. We're in this world of relationships. And it's unsatisfying. It's unsatisfying not to have something concrete to point at, right? I want something I can hold on to. I want to say, this is what I'm doing, and that's what I'm about. Right? And it defies that. It's also scary. It's scary to tear something down, even if you didn't like it, and to not know what will be there in the future for you to be able to cling on to. That can be terrifying, especially if you were raised to find your worth, your acceptance, your purpose within the walls of some religious structure that gave you all those things, and you find out that if you leave it, those are all in question now. It's kind of like that series we did right before Christmas, the gift exchange. You know, that fear of, I don't know if I want to give this gift away because I don't know what's going to be in the package that's coming back to me. Even if what I'm giving up, I know it wasn't good for me, at least I knew it. I knew how to deal with it. I knew what it was, and I don't know what's going to be coming back. That is the situation that we are in. And it's also, you know, if messy, unsatisfying, and scary aren't good enough, it's also ambiguous. I mean, that's fun, right? I mean, we don't like ambiguity. We like to establish status quo. We like to find equilibrium. We want to know what the rules are. Just tell me, what is expected of me? That's all I need to know. What am I supposed to do? I mean, that's a question that comes out of there. And this question of what is expected of me, I have a pretty strong feeling that Jesus' answer to that question would be nothing. But there's nothing expected of you because there is nothing you can do that would make you worthy of my love, that would make you of value, that could create purpose in your life that doesn't already exist. There's nothing you can do. And then Jesus would also say, what is expected of you? Everything. I mean, what can you hold back when the job is to love the Lord your God with all your soul and all your mind and all your heart and all your strength, not just a lot of it or a good proportion or, you know, at least some of it sometime. I mean, no, it's an all or nothing sort of thing. Nothing and everything. Again, paradox seems to be in there, and it seems to be the only way to find a way through some of this stuff. Now, there are some among us here today, probably quite a few among us, that you know, indicated the burnt or hurt part of their experience with God, faith, church, Christianity, whatever. And maybe that happened because of the walls that were built around you, walls of certainty that were put up to eliminate that ambiguity and that mess. And you did grow up finding your acceptance, your worth, your purpose within those walls, and you didn't realize until much later that all of those were dependent on your staying inside of the walls, honoring the code, believing the way you're supposed to believe, belonging, and behaving the way you were supposed to behave, that it all came down to those rules. Now, you may be the most eager of all of us to tear down those walls. But there's very likely with a voice inside of you. And I know that voice. I've heard you talk about it. I've heard it myself. The voice is saying things like, what if he's wrong? Because you don't want to be wrong on this one. You want to hedge your bets, right? Isn't this just worldly wisdom? Skepticism of the day that is nothing compared to the fact that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and you don't mess with that? It's always the same. And isn't there such a thing as truth? After all, you don't get to invent it. You don't get to come up with it. You just learn it. It is taught to you, and you follow it. And you were warned against those false prophets, right? The ones that were going to come with clever words to lead you astray. Yeah, that's me. Always wanted that title. Greg Meyer, false prophet. Looks great on my email signature. What are you going to do with that voice? You're wrestling with it. My guess is that quite a few of us are hearing that right now. It was playing while we were talking earlier on in the gathering today. What we know is that we imprison God and we imprison ourselves and each other when we build walls to make our relationship with God hold still and be manageable. It was never meant to be that way. If the Bible is consistent about anything, it is showing us that our relationship with God cannot stay within the walls. It is always on the move. Israel discovered it. Israel became Israel by spending 40 years, all right? That's Jewish code for forever, in the wilderness, discovering what it meant for them to be a people and for them to be in relationship with God. And it's interesting, how many people that started it finished the journey? Not one. Not one stone will be left upon another. And Jesus, he didn't sit still. One of my favorite sayings of his is, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Well, that's a life I want to sign up for, you know? Was Jesus' constant movement going from village to village and preaching and teaching a symptom of his being ADHD? Or was he trying to tell us something? Is he trying to tell us that what he was inviting us to was not an institution, but it was a movement? It isn't something that we're going to capture in belief systems or in hierarchies or in institutions, but it's all about how we love. And that's it. It all grows out of that. What we can do is talk about how we are growing. Why we're growing, why we're doing what we're doing, and how it helps us be the people that we're trying to be. And then we can focus on the questions that bring growth to us more than focusing on the answers that we come up with, all right? Answers are tempting. Answers are good. I have no objection to answers, but answers get stale really fast. They turn into walls really fast that keep out possibilities. And the questions, on the other hand, continue to be expansive. They continue to lead us on to what's next. Questions can be windows to what we don't know yet. This week, I invite you to consider what it is that you believe. What is it that marks the borders of your world, of what you know, what you understand, what you might imagine, what you think is possible, all right? To imagine what those are all about. Now, you've got a couple of choices of what you're going to do with those borders. We all have borders. There's nothing wrong with having them. You're a human being. You need borders. There's an edge of what you can understand and know and imagine. But you can go to the edge of those borders, and you can build a wall. All right, build walls that stand, and then you go out to those walls and you stand at them and you look at your domain. This is the world, and I want to keep it this way. And I use this wall to reinforce it, to remind me that I've got it figured out, and to keep out all the stuff that's scary and unknown and I haven't figured out yet. Or you can go to those walls and you can put in windows. Windows that let light in. And windows that let light out, too. I mean, we do help each other discover things from what we have learned, what we have discovered. And that's a good thing. And those windows let light in, they let light out, and we can stand there, and we can begin to gaze out at what we do not yet know, what we do not yet understand, or what we have only begun to imagine. And that's a gift for us as well. So, for some of you, this might be the most important series of gatherings you've ever experienced as part of Fabric. And that isn't only if you're on that discontent side, all right? The fact is that you and I have both spent a lot of time and a lot of energy building walls. We have built fancy systems and buildings and temples of our own. And we use them to keep the world the way we're comfortable with it. And as we do it, we're keeping something out. We're keeping out God. We're keeping out our true selves that we've hidden away because it doesn't quite fit into the way the world's expecting, the world we've created. And we've kept out others. And the reason to reimagine this, to make sure there's not one stone left upon another, isn't because God is angry with us until we get this figured out, because that's not what God's concerned with, right? God, that's a game, and God doesn't play games. God just knows what you're losing, the part of your life that is cut off and walled off from yourself. And you're also losing your relationships, the damage that is that kind of world is doing to the people you love and the things that you are committed to. So I invite you to spend this time with us these weeks as you begin to look at how we can put some windows into those walls as we dismantle them and start letting some light shine in. Thanks for listening. We like these conversations to not just be interesting, but to actually make a difference. We'd love to hear from you on how that might be true for you or for the community that you're a part of. We'd also love you to help support our community in the work that we do. You can find information and ways to be in touch and to give us feedback and to support us at www.fabricmpls.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.